Okay, welcome back to part two of Psychology of Tshuva. We are going to be talking about taking action. My name is Rabbi Mordechai Shiffman, Rabbi Dr. Mordechai Shiffman. I'm the assistant professor at Azrieli Graduate School of Jewish Education, assistant rabbi at Kingsway Jewish Center. And for those interested in Torah and psychology related concepts, please check out my website, psychedfortorah.com, where I write a weekly Dvar Torah about psychology and the Parsha. For those who were not here last week, do not fret. We will overview the main points that are necessary to see what this week is all about. So we start off with understanding the basics of the stages of change model, which is used to treat various different addictions as well as changing behavior in general. There's a book, Changing for Good. More recent book I'll reference today, which is called Changing to Thrive, which has great insights into the process of change. And the thesis of what we are trying to do over this three-part series is to show that we can borrow the uniqueness of the stages of change model, see how it relates to the Jewish tradition in terms of the process of tshuva, which can hopefully enhance our tshuva experience and our ability to change our thinking, our behavior, our emotional experience to be more spiritual, more related to God, more related to ourselves, and more related to others. So last week we started off by going through very briefly what are the five, sometimes counted as six, stages of change, and we map them onto the high holiday season. We covered last week, and again, you could access the shiur from last week on yutorah.org. Last week, we covered pre-contemplation, which is the stage where we have absolutely no intention on changing our behavior, as well as the contemplation stage where we start becoming aware of our behavior, but we're not necessarily committed to taking action. I argued that during Elul, it's the time to start thinking about action. Things should not be in the pre-contemplation stage. Ideally, we should try to start at least thinking about changing. If you go back to last week, you'll see various strategies into how we can go about that process. What I want to cover this evening are the next two stages, which are the preparation stage and the action stage. The preparation stage was not part of the model. The model jumped from contemplation, assumed you made a decision and you're ready to go take action, but Prochaska and DiClemente added notice that there was a very important aspect to preparation, which we'll elaborate on today. And then action is the act of taking action, modifying the behavior, and starting to actually change. That, I argue, overlaps with the Rosh Hashanah and Aseres Yemei Tshuva. Rosh Hashanah is where we prepare, we go through our Cheshbon HaNefesh, we take stock of everything, and then Aseres Yemei Tshuva is the 10 days in between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, is when we start taking action and actually actively changing. So let's learn a little bit about this preparation stage. Let's make this smaller. So there's several different components to this stage. Some will spend more time on than others, but the first and foremost point is that preparation is essential to avoid premature action, in the sense that sometimes we get an inspiration, sometimes we go from just contemplating about something to just wanting to take action, but if we skip the preparation stage, if we skip the real processing and planning about how we're going to take that action, we prematurely take action, generally sets us up for failure, and once it sets us up for failure, we get demoralized and we don't try to change again. So it's actually not effective to just jump into change, to jump into action without this preparation stage. That's why it's really important. So the first part of the preparation stage that we want to actively do is to continue the reevaluation. And for those who were here last week, I briefly alluded to the concept of reevaluation, of what we're about to see as a decisional balance. And I held off on fully explaining it till this slide because what this basically, what we're going to be doing is doing a very heavy pros and cons list as to why we should change, why we shouldn't change, in order to fully understand what the gains of changing are, what the costs of changing are, what the gains of what the costs of not changing are. So we'll see that in a moment. But this decisional balance starts in the contemplation stage, which was the previous stage, but really solidifies and gets to its full fruition in this preparation stage. So what's this decisional balance all about? So for this, I take you briefly to the next slide. So here, I found this online. You can access it yourself. This happens to be from a site in Canada that helps to fight diabetes. And they took a decisional balance paradigm from the stages of change and motivational interviewing model and gave you, this is a worksheet. Again, you can download it online and work on your own, whatever you decide to work on. I filled in some examples based on what's a pretty neutral but very fundamental, as we'll argue a little bit later, behavior change, which is starting to exercise. So if we want to start to exercise, and I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking it's pretty good for me. I know there's some studies somewhere that say that it's probably good for my health. I feel very lethargic but I'm not really sure what to do. So starting to learn about it, to read about it, and then to make this what really is a glorified pros and cons list is really going to be helpful in pushing us towards making that in the preparation stage to be able to make a better committed decision. So let's just go through it for a few minutes to see as an example how this works. So the first step, which we usually skip when we change, usually when we change, we only think about the pros of changing and the cons of not changing. But what's fundamentally important is to also think about the pros of not changing. We want to give voice to why it might actually be beneficial for me to not change. So in terms of exercise, why would it be beneficial for me to not change? So here's a few examples. There could be more. Maybe it's less effort. I won't get injured if I don't exercise, right? I started replaying basketball a year or two ago, and I broke my ankle. So there's a cost to get. And somebody told me once when that happens, like, that's why I don't exercise. I'm not going to get hurt. So you can get injured when you exercise. You can get pains in your muscles when you exercise. I don't have to change my schedule in order to find time to schedule exercise within your daily routine. That's a cost. I have to give something else up. If I don't exercise, it won't cause family fights. My decision to exercise might actually cause a strife in the family, because when I decide to exercise, well, that means maybe I'm not going to be spending time with somebody else. I'm not going to be able to, if I have a family, watch my children. So there could be some element of family strife that could come when I decide to insert and assert myself to start exercising. So maybe it's just easier to avoid that whole situation and not even start to exercise. So there's a pro to not exercising. Additionally, maybe it's embarrassing for me to start exercising, especially if I go to a gym. I might be embarrassed about my weight. I might be embarrassed about the fact that I don't have the skills of exercising. So there's actual pros for me not to exercise. And then on the flip, though, if you go to the right-hand column here, there are cons to not exercising. I might get sick, high blood pressure, maybe I'm too overweight. When I don't exercise, maybe I feel bad about myself, low self-esteem, feel lethargic, I'm slowed down, I don't have enough energy, maybe I'm stressed out and exercise. So if I don't exercise, there's a con to that, because it's bad for my physical, mental, emotional health. And then on the flip of it, and to some extent it is just a flip, it's just a matter of how you, the perspective, we then do step two, which is considering making the change. What's the con of making the change? Again, it's too much of a hassle to make the change. It takes too long. I don't know how to. Maybe I could fail, and maybe you're aware, but that's a very big impediment to changing, is people are afraid of failure. So it's easier to not try because then I won't fail and be disappointed and embarrassed, and but for myself, from others, maybe my family's not supportive. And then finally we go, the pros of making the change is I'll have a better weight, I'll improve my heart health, have more energy, get stronger, reduce stress. And the idea here is that, first of all, it's not just a matter of listing how many is on one side versus how many on the other side. This particular decisional balance, which I like a lot, tells you to weigh the different options in the sense that it might mean more to me to not get injured than it would be to not cause family fights or vice versa. So there's a weight between 1 and 10 as to whether it's not such a big deal or a big deal. Then you add up all of those numbers and it gives you a sense for all of the pros of not changing, the cons of not changing, and the pros of changing, the cons of changing. And the number helps give you a view of, well, if the number on the right-hand side is bigger, then that means that I'm leaning towards making a change. If the number on the left-hand side is bigger, that means I'm leaning towards staying the same. So doing the decisional balance is very important to really spell out all the details. And what the, you know, if you go to the Changing to Thrive book, and I recommend all who are seriously considered changing to actively go through a book like this. So in the Changing to Thrive book, they point out that in the first stage where you start doing pros and cons, you might be able to list 2, 3, 4 things. But once you start really brainstorming and doing your research, they have a list here that's 2 pages long as to what the pros of starting to exercise would be. So there's an entire page here on the physical well-being pros of exercising, which includes reducing heart disease, reducing risk of stroke, reducing risk of cancer, and it goes through all the different types of cancer, reducing risk of obesity, literally 20 different things just on physical, 30 different things on physical well-being. Then there's another 15 on functional well-being. I'll have more energy, increased endurance, better problem solving. When I exercise, I can actually think better. Increased stamina, I'll be more alert. I'll have, could be there's financial well-being, social well-being, appealing well-being, emotional well-being, literally 3 or 4 pages on all the possible pros of starting to exercise. And that's where this preparation stage goes from just thinking about it in the contemplation to actually going through and listing out what are the pros of making the change. We want to make the right-hand side of this page, the pros of changing and the cons of staying the same, really heavier to weigh down over the pros of staying the same and the cons of making the change. That's really, and this is a really important step, both to give voice to the pros of staying the same as well as trying to increase the cons of staying the same and the pros of making the change. So if we try to make a change and we never actually did this, the argument is that we're going to be lacking on our ability to follow through on the change because we haven't really solidified in our mind that this is the right decision to make. So decisional balance is really important. Go search for one online and start filling it out if you want to make a change. And you could insert whatever change you want. It could be exercise or a spiritual change, physical change. It could all fit there. Going back a slide, the next part of preparation is to focus more on positive future self. To envision what would it be when I finally change, when I finally reach my goals, when I finally am able to get to where I want to get to. And it's actually interesting, if you go to the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, I have it here for you, chapter 7, halacha 6 to 7. Towards the end of Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam's talking about changing and the mitzvah of tshuva, the mitzvah of vidui, and he goes on a lot of tangents, talks about a lot of different things, and he finally gets to the following two halachos that I think are incredibly powerful, and I think the reason why he emphasizes these is because of this point, that we want to be able to visualize the positive outcomes of changing. And he writes as follows, very powerful language. Gedola tshuva shemekareves ha'esa adam l'shechina. Think about how great our outcome, what we want from tshuva is, that we get to connect to God. We get to become closer to God. skipping a little bit, Hatshuva mekareves es harachokim, emes haya zes sanui lifnei hamakom. Yesterday, this person was despised, scorned, ostracized, but today, through the process of tshuva, and visualize this, if I do tshuva, I can be beloved, desirable, companionable, a friend to God. I get closer to God through the process of Shechina. So to spiritualize it, think about the positive outcomes going with exercise, for example. It would be, look at me, I'm fit, I'm able to run, I'm able to play sports, I'm able to keep healthy. But from a spiritual aspect, visualize what that change in our relationship with God would be. And then he continues in the next halacha. Kama ma'ula ma'ala sachuva. How great is repentance? Yesterday I was a sinner separated from God, but today I'm connected to the Shechina. I'm observing the commandments. They're received with pleasure, with joy. Moreover, he finishes off, his works are pleasurable, anticipated. Again, it repairs this connection that we have to God. And this is essential. Think about that end goal. Think about what we want from our tshuva process. On a spiritual level, the answer is closeness to God. If we can envision that positive future self, that's going to help propel us from the contemplation to the preparation, and then eventually to the action stage. The real crux of the action stage is this fourth box, which is to increase our confidence in our ability to change and to increase our commitment to changing. So we have to believe that we can change. And this is something I wrote about in this week's Psyched for Torah, connected to the Parsha, about that there's always hope to change. There's always a belief that I can change. It's fundamental to the tshuva process that I can always try to change. I might not be able to change everything fully, but there's always something to work on. There's always something to improve. And then in terms of making this a priority, and this is also essential, because what ends up happening is that we say, we give lip service to wanting to change. We might even be committed on a theoretical level to change. But then the question is, do we make it a priority? And unfortunately, there's no easy way to change. And unless we figure out a way to make changing a priority in our lives, we carve out the time, we carve out the thinking space, the reflection piece. Again, if we're talking about exercise, carving out the time to be able to exercise. If we don't make it a priority of changing, we will not succeed. So the preparation stage, its goal is to increase our confidence we can do it, but also to increase our commitment to be able to prioritize the change process. In addition, in the preparation stage, as we get ready to take action, we take small steps, little baby steps. We're not ready to do a full 180 yet, but we start in the direction. And I always like this. I heard this from one of my rebbeim from YU, Rabbi Chaim Angel, said this over in one of the classes. The Rambam here in Hilchos Tshuva says, "Rishus l'chol adam nesuna imratza lahatos atzmo l'derech tovo liosadik harishus biyado." If you want to do tshuva, you have the option. Rambam's talking about having the free will to change, but the language that he uses to talk about making the change is lahatos, which literally means to lean towards, and to make one even a leaning in the right direction. I believe he used the metaphor of a 1 degree angle, right? A 1 degree angle, when you start over here, it's a very small difference. But when the 1 degree angle over time grows and grows and grows and grows, is a bigger, 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 bigger difference. So there's a real power to small steps, to lahatos, to just start moving in the right direction. Small steps are important for the preparation stage. Creating the plan by ourselves is important, not having somebody tell you what to do, but to be part of the process of change. In addition to go public with your change, there's some interesting halachic discussion here, whether or not you should go public with your sins. The Rambam distinguishes between sins that are between man and his fellow that you should go public with, between man and God you perhaps shouldn't go public with. But the main idea within the psychology literature is that by committing to action in a public forum, it helps push you, and now there's some, what's hopefully a healthy social pressure, to follow through, because you don't want to let yourself down within the public eye. So if done healthily, going public can be appropriate. And then finally, don't over-rely on willpower, which means to say that we often fall into the trap, it's a thinking trap, that if I only had enough willpower, I would be able to succeed in my goals. And then when we fail, we blame it on willpower. And what we're going to see a little bit later on is that willpower is not the whole game. There's more to change, and we shouldn't just rely on willpower, because sometimes just willpower is not enough, and we need to create other ways of fighting to change, and not just say, if I will myself to do it, if I just tried a little bit harder, I'd be able to do it. We need to be able to get a bigger overview, look at other factors that are impacting our ability to change, and not just willpower. Okay, so there's eight, and each one of these can really be elaborated on in more detail, but 8 points here in terms of what the preparation stage is all about. Once I feel that I've increased my confidence, I've increased my commitment, I've thought about the pros and cons, I've made my plan, I went public, I already started taking the steps, and I really feel like it's time to start taking action, that moves us into the action phase, where we actively start to make continual change. Three categories for action that we want to be thinking about. How do we continue the action plan? Countering, environmental control, and reward. Starting with countering. And this is essential. If I try to make a change in my psychology, a change in my spirituality, a change in my behavior, remember, there was a reason why I was not doing that behavior beforehand. If it was exercising, again, what was the pros of not changing? There's a pros, there's a benefit to not exercising. Let's go with smoking as an example. This one's pretty clear. If somebody smokes, when they're smoking, a pro of smoking is that it relieves stress. If we don't take into account that once somebody stops smoking, they will now need a new avenue to relieve stress, they will eventually fail in that change process because they'll be so stressed out and they won't know what to do with it. So we need to create what's called countering in order to deal with what am I going to do instead of this behavior that's been causing me issues. And there's a few ways to deal with countering. One is called active diversion, to try to distract myself as much as possible. There's a famous Gemara that says that if the Yetzer is trying to overtake you, I quoted it here on the bottom, Impaga b'cha menuvol zeh, the Yetzer is trying to take you, mashcheh lebeis hamedrash, take him to the Beis HaMedrash, meaning go learn Torah. You can understand that on a several different layers, but on a simple layer, you're distracting yourself. You're going to do something productive and not sitting and stewing and thinking about how hard it is to change. Another example that you can use for countering, and I said we'd allude to exercise later on, here it is. Exercise is a huge, not just about changing an exercise behavior, but whatever behavior you're trying to change, exercise is a key component to changing. So if I, going back to smoking, I want to stop smoking, exercising is a good way, when I feel the urge to smoke, to be able to go and then exercise will help me get past that urge. And the same would be true for any behavior. Exercising, as what Charles Duhigg calls in The Power of Habit, is actually a keystone habit, which means that by working on exercising, other habits can actually become more solidified. So if you wanted to work on one thing, exercise might be a really important thing. Helps my physical life, mental life, other behaviors, keeps me more mentally acute. Exercise is a huge thing to work on, and here serves as a countering technique to distract ourselves by doing something healthy when we are trying to change. Relaxation techniques is also something that's important to be able to calm down. Mindfulness, meditation, there are apps that can help you. The Calm app, the Headspace app can really help calm people down when they're trying to make changes, as well as counter thinking, which is a little bit too involved to get into right now. I refer you back to last year. I gave a shiur, should be on YU Torah, called Cognitive Behavioral Tshuva, where I focused more on the thinking aspect. But it's important, in brief, to be able to identify what thought process go through our heads that are counter the change process, and be able to then talk back to those thinking that's hurting us and be able to think more productively, more rationally. It's a lot to say there. We'll have to do that a different time. Again, go back to last year's Shir Cognitive Behavioral Tshuva for some more ideas about that. In the middle, we have environmental control. And this really plays as the counter to the willpower, which means to say that very often, in order for me to change a behavior, it's not just about me saying I'm going to change. It's about me creating or changing my environment to be more likely to succeed. So if there is something tempting me, I want to avoid that temptation. So if I'm overeating, I don't want to have snacks and junk food in my house. I want to control my environment to be able to build me for success and not lead me to failure. There's we're going to skip Q's and Whoop for now, but in the link when I post this, you can search Whoop. It's an interesting website that helps with behavior change based on some science of behavior modification. Very cool stuff. You can check out that link. I also encourage everybody to think about technology as using as a benefit as reminders. Remind ourselves, I want to change. Set an alarm, I'm going to exercise at this time. That's the reminder. That's the alarm. Use technology to our advantage to help us move towards the change process. And this whole environmental control box is really summed up in what the Rambam says, based in Pirkei Avos, other Gemaras, Misrachik harbe min hadavar shechata. Part of the tshuva process is staying really far away from the thing that tempts us. It's essential not to put ourselves to tempt fate, to tempt the Yetzer Hara, stay far away from the Yetzer Hara as possible. Finally, the last point we'll make for this evening is reward. Part of taking action is being able to reward ourselves effectively when we do a good job. And rewarding can come in various forms. Two forms are covert, which basically means to be our own coach. When we do something good, tell ourselves, you did a great job. You stayed away from that taiva. You stayed away from that yetzer hara. Good job. I'm proud of myself for being able to do that. That reinforces the good behavior. And the second type is a little more complicated. There's a link here to a website called stick.com, which basically sets up a contract for yourself that says that if I follow through on my behavior, good. If not, I will have to pay some sort of penalty. And what it basically does, it sets up a financial incentive. They also have social incentives to be able to follow through on the behavior. So we reward good behavior and we try to punish bad behavior by incentivizing the better behavior. So if we want to take action and we don't think about countering and environmental control and how we're going to reward ourselves effectively, again, we're setting ourselves up for failure. So we want, as we engage in the tshuva process, to be able to look at it from a holistic perspective, to look at all of these stages and to go through them in a way that doesn't leave any box unchecked, so that when we do try to change, it's not a premature action that we haven't thought through, we haven't really weighed our pros and cons, we're not fully committed, we don't even know how to do it really, and we haven't really followed through on what the stages of change in terms of action are, and then we fail and we say, oh, I can't do tshuva, I'm hopeless. So by doing it appropriately, hopefully we can be more successful and less demoralized from the process of continuing to try to change and failing to change, trying to change and failing to change. Which leads us to a preview for next week, which is part three, is that once we do start seeing some momentum in our change, when we take the action stage, how do we maintain those gains and how do we deal with relapse? Again, feel free to reach out to me, psychvitora.com. My email is mordechai.schiffman@yu.edu. Look forward to seeing everybody again next week.